another episode of the Adeptus Ridiculous Podcast. My name is DK Diamantes, his name is Bricky, and that other person's name will be addressed soon. But before that, if you enjoyed today's episode of the podcast, and maybe you want to consider supporting us, head over to patreon.com/AdeptusRidiculous, where you can get access to the Discord, bloopers if they happen. The $15 tier list gets you access to all of our posters in crispy digital HD format. Ooh, it's so good. Patreon.com/AdeptusRidiculous. And golly, these last few months sure have been cold. Hey, Bricky, is there a place where one could, oh, I don't know, get a sweatshirt and or sweatpants that are just really stylish and keep you nice and warm in these cold winter months?
It's so hilarious that you said that, because it was like 80 degrees yesterday for us.
Yeah, but it's still, you know.
But still. Hey, if you want to get some wonderful merchandising, you can go down to orchid8.com, link in the description, and get yourself some fantastic hoodies, sweatpants. And if you aren't feeling like that, hey, you know, some dice perhaps, or a little game mat or something of that nature to really tie you over. Perhaps even a hat, because hats are cool. Check it out, orchid8.com, link in the description. And we're reading War Boss for the book club, so make sure you read War Boss for the book club.
Wah. Merchandising.
Spaceballs the flamethrower.
As taglines go, it's not bad. It's pretty strong. I could see that.
Well,
I
mean, who's that? Bricky, who's that?
I moved my roadcaster, so I can't hit the soundboard as easily as I could before.
Oh, nice. Good.
I lied to you out of my goddamn teeth, DK. I would never move my soundboard too far away. I would never. Hey, Kyrgoth, how's it going?
Hello. I feel like this is just as chaotic as I thought it might be.
Yeah.
Oh, hi, Kyria. You can't say you hate it here now. You're locked in. You're locked in at this stage.
There's sure. This is my life and this is my home.
You've passed over the event horizon of the black hole and you're just being drawn in no matter what you do.
Event Horizon. That's that movie based on 40K, eh?
Hey, wow. How did you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
What a segue.
Yeah.
Wait, what do you mean, what a segue?
Wait, yeah, what?
I'm just, you know, I'm just throwing it out there.
Are we doing 40K adjacent movies?
No, we're not.
Oh, you said segue normally means it has something to do with the previous statement.
Yeah, Kamen.
I just really wanted to see whether that was an exciting proposition or not. But now we know we can do it in the future. There we go. That's
40K adjacent movies that are kind of in the universe of 40K but aren't? That'd be a great episode.
Well, we'll do that next time then. I've said that out loud. Okay, no, don't hold me to that.
All right,
Shy's tell him,
yelling
Bricky.
At
tell
us.
Him. Yeah, tell Shy, him, Bricky. Tell
Shy
him.
Shy is yelling at us, so, you know, I guess we have to do our discussions.
I guess we have to do work now.
How long until Shy regrets this whole setup? How long? Do you reckon it's already happened?
It's already done.
We're past that point. Okay.
Yep. We're already here. Big announcement for all of our fans and viewers. We have decided for the brand new beautiful year of 2024 that Kyrgoth will be joining us on a semi-permanent basis.
Let's go.
Wait, Kyrgoth, why are you so big?
Damn, you're Jack, dude. I'm just a little guy and
it's loosely based off real life, but what you do is you take all the mass from the kind of chest up and move it slightly lower, and that's how it's kind of been interpreted.
That might actually be my canonical height next to Bricky, though.
How tall are you, Kyrgoth?
5'11".
Yeah. You know what? I appreciate the honesty, man. You could have said 6 foot easily, but you gave us the. You gave us the 5'11", and I really appreciate that.
For ages I thought it was 6, and then we measured, and it's literally like 5'11 and a half. But you know what? 5'11 and a half, it's not 6, so I'm not going to say 6, because it's not true. You've got to be honest about these things.
I'm just surprised you didn't hit us with the centimeters number.
I don't know that. That requires conversion work that I'm not prepared to put in.
Don't you live in the UK?
Yeah, but everyone does feet for height, right?
Really?
I think so.
In the UK? Wait, really?
I think.
Is that whatever? Is that why they have? Is that why we measure in inches in 40K, despite this being a British game?
I mean, quite possibly, yeah. I mean, it's an absolute mess over here. Just whatever number you fancy at the time tends to be what you go for. So okay.
Never mind. Anyway, I see we have an Iron Warrior Warpsmith look going on here. So it's good stuff. We need a little bit of chaos set up in here.
I mean, it's got to be something, you know, tech related, hasn't it? It's got to be something vehicle based. Otherwise, you know, why am I even here?
So, Bricky, you said Kyrioth is joining us on a
yes, of course. At the end of every month, the last episode of each month, it will be a Kyrioth episode. So you're going to get him a total of 12 whole times this year. And which actually sounds like not a whole lot, if I'm being honest. But
it really doesn't.
He'll be joining us for the end of every single month, and not just about vehicles, but just to do a nice, fun group thing, and also give me a week off, and give DK half a week off.
Yeah, because I get so tired of listening to Bricky. It's just
he gets it.
I'm just here to make everything easier. That's not true. That's not how that's going to work at all. But, you know.
I think you should try to get quotes that Bricky can't figure out.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Well, I mean.
Because I'm not going to get it no matter what. Like, that's easy. You need to get one that Bricky can't get.
I'm kind of hoping that this one might be like starting out strong in that regard.
Because, you have a quote?
Ooh.
I do have a quote. It's a cut down quote, because if I did the whole thing, I mean, it's like the better part of like a third of a page. So we're not going to do the whole lot, but I feel like this is like a nice, it could do the trick straight off the bat, or I'm just going to be proved a liar and Bricky's going to get it immediately. We'll see.
I was there when Horus slew the Emperor. I hope it's that close.
Imagine if that was the first one. I think I'm going to get him with this and then go straight into that. Not amazing, terrible. So, shall I give you the quote for this?
Please.
Yes.
For this episode. Yes. A conflict the likes of which has not been seen since the Monkai warred amongst themselves and their corpse of a seer fell to his traitorous son is coming, and all my steps lead towards it, no matter that I walk other paths. I see the stars stained red with the blood of the Monkai, and though their wars do not concern me, and I would gladly let them destroy one another, I know that to avoid this fight is to condemn my race to inevitable doom, and though all I see is darkness, I know that I will not flinch from my destiny.
So this is some Eldari shit.
So is this Yvrain talking about the Inari?
That's kind of... You're on the right track, but in the wrong time period. But it's also the correct time period.
So it's not Yvrain or the Inari, but it's... Well, I thought...
It is Eldar-based.
Right.
Even I got that it was the Eldar talking about the human conflict, because it's star-stained red, the Monk.
So, what about...
I can't help you here, Bricky. This is all you, man.
Well, I'm thinking, like, you said, well, it said the, this was spoken as in it's past the Horus Heresy, right? This is after.
It is, yeah. After the Horus Heresy.
Right. And so it's like, hey, I want you to, like, I guess I want to figure out who the speaker is. Is it Prince Uriel, or?
It is not. I can give you a little, they are yeah, the, yeah.
Give me a little poke.
It's a Farseer.
Oh, it's Eldred.
It is, yeah.
Okay.
So he's got binoculars.
Yeah. I love that meme so much. It's such a good one.
It is.
I don't know what they're referring to. I'm assuming I saw that maybe it was like the overarching massive chaos thing and stuff, but like, I don't know. I don't know what they're specifically referring to, unless they're just referring like the Tyranids or something.
This is admittedly a bit of a curveball, because it is something that technically you have already covered, because you've already done an episode on the 13th Black Crusade and the fall of Cadia.
Oh, I thought I recognized that phrase. Yeah, because Eldred and Ulthway took part in this.
He did, but you covered the 2017 version of what happened on the 13th Black Crusade, which is not the original story for it. We're going to talk today about the 2003 version and the corresponding Eye of Terror Codex that came along with it.
Ooh, really?
Where,
okay.
It's really cool. It's one of those things where Games Workshop took an established event and then massively changed it. They did a whole lot of retconning in order to make way for Robot Girly Man coming back, the Primaris showing up, Cadia being destroyed by Abaddon the Despoiler. But that was all built off something that happened way back in 2003 when Games Workshop held a global event where you could log your games and it would have an impact on the Warhammer 40K universe as a whole.
Huh.
Okay, interesting.
So in the 13th Black Crusade that you guys already covered, there is a big, long list of all the people involved. You've got, like, St. Celestine, you've got Greyfax showing up, Belisarius Call was introduced. The 2003 version has a much shorter roster, and so many big things that happened in the kind of retcon version just didn't occur when the 13th Black Crusade was originally done. So if I just read the defending commanders for the original 13th Black Crusade, you've got Creed, you've got Lord Marshal Attica of the Imperial Guard, you've got Great Wolf Logan Grimnar, you have Iron Father Cardan of the Iron Hands, Eldrad Ulthran, and you have Phoenix Lord Morgan Ra. That's
oh,
it.
Oh, what a cool dude, that Morgan Ra.
It's so short compared to the newer one, where you've got Sven Blood.
Wait, that's it?
Oh yeah, the notable characters for the original were really quite a small group of people. There weren't that many.
Oh wow! And yeah, because the new one is like Smash Brothers. They're all here.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a who's who of interesting and important people.
Yeah,
and there are things like the. We have the intervention of Trace in the Infinite in the newer version. That was not a thing in the 2003 13th Black Crusade, because there was no Trace in the Infinite in the Necron Codex that had come out 1 year previous. So a character like very instrumental in just the understanding of things like the Black Pylons didn't actually exist at the time.
Huh.
Well,
did you say it was like based on like people logging their games and stuff, and like
yes,
that had the direct impact on who the important people in this thing were?
So there was like a bunch of kind of pre-existing conditions and events that would happen, but Games Workshop basically published a map of the Eye of Terror of the Cadian system and the systems surrounding it, and said, okay. We have different forces. We've got the forces of order and the forces of disorder. So for the forces of disorder, you've got Chaos Space Marines, Necrons, Orcs, Dark Eldar, Tyranids, and the Lost and the Damned, a faction which technically no longer exists.
Yeah, and we've talked about the Lost and the Damned before.
Oh, they're so good.
The Ghost Riders.
Yeah.
The Forces of Order, Space Marines, Imperial Guard, Tau, Eldar, Sisters of Battle, Demon Hunters, Kroot Mercenaries, Space Wolves, 13th Company, Ulthway Strike Force, and Cadian Defense Force. So the idea was that you played games of Warhammer 40,000, you sent the results of those games to Games Workshop, and they tallied those up against different systems and worked out who had the most influence. And then that would decide what happened to that system. It was
wow,
awesome. And also, The number that I've seen thrown around the most when kind of going back to this, because I vaguely remember this because of starting sort of in third and like remembering the Necron Codex coming out. Mm. The number that I've seen thrown around the most in terms of how many people participated in this, given that this was 21 years ago, in 2003, over 40,000 people took part.
Whoa!
In logging results, which for the time, like when you consider, I mean, it's not like Warhammer was not as popular then as it is now, not by a long shot. And to have that many people participating, like that long ago, it's crazy. I think since February of 2022 to now, there's been like, I think it's about 20,000 people who have taken part in different, like ITC tournaments and stuff, so playing 40K competitively.
Yeah.
Having like twice that number way back in 2003 is pretty significant. It's pretty impressive. And Games Workshop allowing the fan base to kind of sort of dictate where the story went was like, they'd done it before. They'd done a few worldwide campaigns before, but they'd always been very limited. They did one for Armageddon, for instance. But for something this big, for Cadia, like the fate of Cadia to be decided by games logged by the players online was pretty massive.
Not to mention, there's like a couple funky things. Like it's 2003, so the ability to like, I don't know, make a bot to make sure Cadia doesn't die is not really a thing.
It's true.
Also, it's a really interesting thing about old school Warhammer too, because new school Warhammer, one of the biggest complaints to it is that it's too competitive, and it's not as fluffy as it used to be. I think those people have pretty rose tinted glasses as they forget about arguing about an armor facing for an hour. But that being said, there is back in the day, the games where I argue superbly more unbalanced, but dice also mattered like three times more. So you could absolutely trounce a good army just because the dude rolled like three too many ones. And so it was really, really fascinating, the differences. And it's funny to think about like how much more, important or how much more affecting old school 40K was.
Yeah, it was overall way more swingy, like way more swingy, and not necessarily in a kind of, oh, this person's got a really overpowered army. It's like, well, yeah, but also you could just accidentally trash people without really meaning to, just because of how, I don't know, I found dice. That, yeah. I mean, I had a not good build for my Iron Warriors army in 3rd edition, and it still did pretty well on quite a few occasions, not because of how good I was or because of how good the army was, because it wasn't.
But it's because you loaded your dice.
I just had lead plating on one side of the dice,
yeah, and that did all the work.
Is that why you were in my bathroom for so long?
It was lead poisoning. I was just slowly losing my mind, and I didn't know what was going on.
Oh, I thought you were trying to flush the dice.
No, only an absolute nab tries to flush the lead dice, because they just sit in the bottom of the bowl, and you can't.
I can't imagine anyone has ever done that. I mean,
no way. So
that'd be crazy.
That'd be nuts.
Oh, it's so good. I love that picture. It makes me laugh every time. So, yeah, the kind of original 13th Black Crusade was a global campaign where players decided the fate of Cadia, and it was massive. It wasn't just Warhammer 40K, though, because Battlefleet Gothic was still a thing at the time. So you had Warhammer 40K doing the battles on the ground, and then you had Battlefleet Gothic deciding who had control of airspace. So you had these two different games, like, kind of affecting the overall story, the overall lore of the game. There was also mention that I found a couple of points of Inquisitor being involved as well, but I didn't really find very much about that at all. By that point, I think Inquisitor had kind of fallen by the wayside quite a lot, and you can actually go onto the Eye of Terror website, sort of, kind of, You have to do it via Wayback Machine, which I'll link you. It's a bit ropey, as you'd expect, given that I think most of it was done through Flash. So it's not just like old for now. The thing that it needed to function properly no longer exists, which makes it a little bit tricky. But you had this massive campaign. You had Codex Eye of Terror that was supporting it, which I still think is one of the best codexes that Games Workshop ever made. Mostly because they added some really, really fun stuff into the game. It was then sadly taken away really quickly because as soon as the edition changed, it was like, all of this is gone. Good luck. Sorry about that. But there's a few gems in there that I absolutely love. Like, you're a fellow lover of the Imperial Guard, Bricky. You
what?
Know
no, he
I mean,
the guard.
On occasion. I mean, if you got to put it that way.
If you want to phrase it like that.
What was that?
That was my silly little giggle, because I'm a silly little guy.
Yuck. Never again.
It was an experience. Maybe not one to be repeated, but it was an experience. So something that you could take was the Cadian Defense Force, which had a bunch of additional rules, which I do have right here. One of my favorite bits from that whole thing, just from the whole thing, was the inclusion of youth platoons. So
oh,
you could have
no.
youth army platoons for the Imperial Guard.
You were able to canonically run child soldiers. Let's go.
Oh,
you
my God.
Absolutely were.
The
yes.
Children yearn for the from the mines. They yearn for combat.
Geez. Yep. There is All a right. quote in here which I love to this day. Any Cadian who can't field strip his own lasgun by age 10 was born on the wrong planet.
Jesus Christ.
I think they actually
absolutely
still use that
brutal.
Quote. I think I remember specifically stating that because there was like a line for Cadians where it's like, you will learn to strip your lasgun by 10. You will be doing artillery drills by 12, like et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yep. It really kind of hammers home just what an absolute hellhole Cadian is. The fact that is just, it's just a commonly accepted phrase. So one of the things that this book allowed you to do was to field youth army platoons. So a youth army platoon consists of 2 to 5 squads of cadets. The whole platoon functions as a single unit, which means that you will have a single unit from 20 to 50 models, which
wow.
is amazing. And the best thing is you go for that full 50 model unit size, you're looking at 200 points, which is mad and great at the same time.
Wait, 200 points of well, for 50?
So
are we still playing? Are we
50?
Are we still playing in the 1500 or the 2000 points cost?
So at this point, I believe it was 1850 was the most commonly accepted. Which I mean, why? But yeah, it 50 guardsmen effectively. So.
Jeez.
You could just flood. You could flood with basically children. You're basically just throwing wave upon wave of youth army platoons of people if you want.
Oh, jeez.
At least until the most recent codexes, they did have conscripts as a unit, and some people would bring like 300 models to a game, but even that I think is a low amount compared to this.
It's also the phrasing, like just youth army just doesn't sound great, does it?
No, that does not sound like a thing that should exist.
Youth army cadets. Woohoo! don't forget though, a missile launcher is another 20 points.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you don't have to pay for it. You can't.
So
just
when little Timmy pulls out the GAT. you got to make sure you're paying Jeez. For it.
Yeah. Oh, man. Child soldier with their rocket launcher. Oh, boy. All right.
Okay. It's so good. In a wow, this is awful sort of way. I absolutely love it. So this is one of the things
grim darkness.
Yeah. It's one of the things that I think made that the kind of that campaign, the Eye of Terror campaign, and that 13th Black Company so fun and interesting and very different to the 2017 version was the fact you had this supporting codex that you could use to field armies that then appeared in that campaign, like the 13th Company for the Space Wolves, which was the first introduction of the Wolfen. So we got the Wolfen again.
Is that the supposed second to time be a good thing?
I was going to say, so that's who we blame for the Wolfen. Okay.
To be fair, I feel like the original Wolfen models, so the newer ones, I mean, I'm not a particularly big fan of the newer ones, but that's because I had an army of the old ones. Well, not of, but I had a bunch in my 13th Company army.
Yeah, the old ones aren't so bad, actually. They're just like space marines that are kind of werewolfy.
Yeah.
The new ones are definitely... It's weird. The new ones look really goofy and weird. And, like, I kind of prefer the old ones.
The old ones are... I just think they're, like, classic. They're, like, classic models. I really, really like them. And the 13th Company of the Space Wolves, they did their own box for them, which was really fun, which was a mix of a Space Wolves box and a Chaos Space Marines box, because they'd been in the Eye of Terror. They'd been hunting traitors since the time of the Heresy. So when you bought a box of 13th Company Space Wolves, you got a 50-50 split of Space Wolves stuff and Chaos Space Marine stuff. So you had that, like, all the kit bashing stuff was just in the box as one big thing.
That's pretty cool, actually.
The only downside was no vehicles. No vehicles for the 13th Company, because they couldn't maintain them. So the Space Wolves 13th Company army had just a blanket ban on transport and on vehicles apart from bikes. You could take bikes, but that was it. So as an army, it was not the easiest to play. I did have a 13th Company army, and it was interesting because it was like, okay, where's your heavy armor? How'd you get in there? Well, you kind of don't in a way, because none of that is allowed. You're not allowed any of that stuff. Really, really pared down army list. Like, I know that when it comes to Space Marines just as a whole these days, codexes are quite, like, especially Space Marine stuff, quite bloated, right? There's a lot going on. There's a lot of models. There's a lot of data sheets.
DK, don't say a word.
What? I wasn't going to say anything.
You so were. I heard it. What was I
going to say, Bricky?
No, really? Space Marines bloated? never. I could feel it coming from you. I don't know
what you're talking about.
It was
Bricky.
The most DK thing to do.
I don't know what you're talking about, sir. I still got you to say it though. Like,
yeah, you're. Well, it was clear. Thank you very much. I do find it very humorous that the 13th Company, because they just flat out aren't, like, they're Wolfen. They can't maintain vehicles.
That is pretty great. I mean, canonically, Wolfen should not be able to maintain vehicles. That's fair.
Can we appreciate the fact that there's someone in that second photo as Wolfen just grabbing a chaos, like, cultist just throwing him?
It's like, he might be about to Bane backbreak him.
I was about to say that. It's like, he takes after his Primarch very well.
Yes, exactly. Right over the knee. Break his back and make him humble.
It's so good. Such good art. Sheik. A lot of the art from those codexes are just so, so cool. So actually, that's, Shai is correct. We should probably talk a little bit about the main difference with the kind of, with the two 13th Black Crusades is the end more than anything else. So obviously there's a much reduced kind of roster of characters for the one that took place in 2003. Right, Belisarius Call didn't exist. You didn't have Celestine showing up. Phoenix Lord Morgan Rau showed up and did way more than any. So I don't think he was really mentioned all that much in the, like, retcon version. I don't remember him showing up all that much, but he fought alongside Creed in defense of a planet in the original. But through this campaign and through the way that they took all of these different reports of Battlefleet Gothic games and Warhammer 40k games, initially, it looked kind of bad. The Forces of Disorder basically piled all of their effort into trying to take a single planet, and it didn't work. Because the way the system worked meant that you were supposed to kind of assault different places and attempt to overthrow general control, and it was all done through percentages and stuff. So it was less like, okay, if you just keep throwing guys at this one planet, then you will win. That wasn't how they actually did it. They did like a percentage system. So depending on how many games you won would affect the percentage of Imperial control. And if you managed to erode it away completely, then either the Forces of Disorder would take that planet, or in a couple of cases, Games Workshop would then decide, okay, well, the Imperium would not stand losing this planet, and therefore they would be forced to use Exterminatus and just get rid of it. Mm-hmm. So after the first week, it was looking kind of ropey straight away. And then, because at this point you had, I mean, there's a bunch of forums now, but there were quite a few larger forums going on. The Disorder players and Chaos in particular really got themselves very well organized to the extent where there were two groups, the Triad and the Planet Killers. And through those two groups, they started to not just push back against Imperial control, but just take system after system and start really hammering away to the extent where it became a thing of, oh, well, you know, the Imperium as a whole was still more popular back then, just like it is now. Mm-hmm. Is this going to end up being a wash where nothing really happens? To, oh, Disorder and Chaos are actively just making massive inroads towards Cadia and are having a really big impact on the setting at this stage. To the point where it came down to Cadia itself, and instead of what we've had happen in 2017, where, you know, the fall of Cadia, the planet broke before the Guard did, we lost...
The Eye of Terror opens up, and Cicatrix Maledictum, and
huge rift across the galaxy, just bad news for absolutely everyone. Mm-hmm. It was a lot less traumatic, in a way, because at the end of the 13th Black Crusade, technically Chaos had done quite a bit of damage on Cadia, but Cadia was not destroyed. And whilst they kind of had control over the planet's surface, they did not have control over the airspace, because the ground battles went the way of the Forces of Disorder, but the space battles played through Battlefleet Gothic went the way of the Imperium. So you had this massive stalemate where all of this campaign had gone on, and at the end of it, Cadia wasn't secure, but it also hadn't fallen. It wasn't out of commission, and no reinforcements could come to help Chaos because the Imperium had won the space side of the battle and had effectively cut off the planet from being reinforced by the enemy.
They did, so Chaos would eventually lose.
A little switcheroo.
Yep. It's such a different like ending to what Games Workshop then changed it to.
Wait, so that's how it ends back then? Is just like, yeah, Chaos took Cadia, but eventually they're going to get starved of whatever because they can't get any reinforcements?
Yeah, they basically ended it on that stalemate. And that stalemate lasted from 2003 until 2017, where they did the Gathering Storm stuff and introduced, you know, way more characters, had some really big kind of events when it came to like character deaths and stuff. For instance, in the first 13th Black Crusade, Creed, funnily enough, was not stolen by Trazin because he wasn't a thing.
Yeah, because Trazin didn't exist yet, so he couldn't be put in the gallery.
His best friend, also, Color Sergeant Kel, was still alive at the end of it.
I remember when you could run Kel. I remember when you could run Creed.
He was still going. He was wounded, but alive. Quite a big thing, and that something I remember people being slightly unhappy about, was Eldrad as well. Eldrad did not have a great time at the end of the original 13th Black Crusade, because Eldrad managed to make it onto the Blackstone Fortress that Abaddon had brought to the Cadian system. He wanted to try and, like, connect with it and to, like, uncorrupt it, only to find that when he got into the Blackstone Fortress's sentience, he found an extension of Slaanesh.
Ooh.
Who killed him.
Oh!
Just wiped him out. Now, he'd kind of, not like, stopped it from being a permanent thing, because for a long time it was a case of, you know, people didn't know what had happened to him. He might be able to come back, he might be trapped somewhere, because he'd put a lot of his soul and kind of mind into a bunch of waystones and things. So it was kind of a, he's been taken out, but is it the end for him? We're not sure.
Right. But I thought when he found Slaanesh and got killed by Slaanesh, his soul took the big oofie for the Eldar and, you know.
The big oofie, huh?
The big
oofie. I mean, there's no bigger oofie for an Eldar than to get killed and sucked up by Slaanesh, right? Like, to have their soul right through a straw, you know?
I guess that's true, but I feel like, it's the
biggest oofy for an Eldar.
I think death is a big oofy for many people, yeah.
Well, yeah, but if their soul is still in a soul stone, they can potentially eventually do some magic nonsense, and, you know, it's 40K. Death is never the end.
DK, let me make this clear. Just because you are right, it's not about you being wrong or right. It's about your phrasing. It's about the big oofy.
What is?
Like, uh-oh, I got eaten. My soul got eaten, and I'm going to be tortured for all of eternity. Oh, whoopsie. You use it with the same gusto as knocking down a cup of coffee.
Shai said, uh-oh, my soul got eaten by God of sadism. It's a bit of an oofy. Not a bit of one. It is a big oofy, I say. The biggest. You know, that's a big oofy.
I have a video for this.
Uh-oh. Whatever it is, Shai, don't put it in.
I very nearly died just there. I just took a sip of water as you said it, and it went straight into the lungs, and now I'm in real trouble.
Oh, no! Oh, we've ended Kyriath before it even began!
It's not going to be 12 episodes. It's just the one, and then that's
That's a bit of an oofy.
This
really,
is the vibe I'm getting right here. This is the vibe I'm getting from the
that
big
one,
oofy.
I love that one. That is a great one. I see that as a Raiders and Devils and Canadians fan, I see that gif on the regular. In replies, so I don't even have to play it. I know exactly what it is.
Well,
yeah,
I saw
the title and went, I know what that is. I immediately remember this.
I have been a very big fan of the Chiefs, you know.
Go to hell.
Sorry, that was a bit of an oofy. My apologies.
To hell. That was a big oofy.
I did a big oofy.
You like, obviously, Raiders hate the Chiefs, but literally everybody outside of Kansas City hates you now, too.
I don't even understand football.
Well, whatever.
What, like, when's the part when they go down on each other? Like, how many downs does it reach first?
Oh, you get four downs.
Four downs?
10 yards. Yeah.
I should learn.
You didn't know there were four downs per really? You know there were four downs?
I know there's four.
Bricky, that's
still speaking
oofy,
English? What happened? Did I black out?
So, Kyriath, what are we doing next here? What are
Kyriath,
we?
You speak English. We speak American.
So, Eldrad got a bit of an oofy. Not the biggest one, because he didn't get his soul sucked up, but.
Oh,
you
can
say that he had a predicament. I think I think you can put it that way. He had a definite predicament.
Yes.
I can't even pass that sentence that Shai just put in there. So
Shai, one of those was fruit, and she does not count in that category.
Definitely not.
That is not fair. Two of them, yes. Well, at least one of them.
Yeah, Zen and Matara are definitely in that category for sure. Not fruit. Fruit is pretty wholesome. That's, you know.
Well, until she started screaming like for the Emperor shit during Darktide. All right, Kyriath, let me ask you.
let's reel this thing back in, shall we?
Yeah, Kyriath, you a fan of fishing?
What the hell?
Yeah, a bit. All right, cool. You should be good at knowing how to reel. Let's go.
I just don't know how to recover from just reading that sentence. Right. It's still breaking.
So Eldred, Eldred got dunked on by Slaanesh, eh?
Yes. So effectively, Eldred goes in to try and help. He does try and help, and it just doesn't go very well. He is pretty much kind of dead for the next 14 years of real time. I'm not entirely sure how much Games Workshop did to change that lore-wise, or whether it was just a case of, you're playing him from a different time, which they do like to do. You know, there's plenty of characters in codexes and stuff that are like, well, technically this person's gone, but the whole... I mean, yeah, to be fair, it did feel harsh at the time, and that was the main thing that I distinctly remember one person at my local gaming store getting very upset about, because it was that thing of two unrelated factions have a fight, and then as a result, you're like one of your main characters gets wiped out. Which,
oh yeah, that would be pretty brutal as an Eldar fan, wouldn't it? Or as an Eldar player, yeah.
Kind of harsh. Really kind of harsh.
That's brutal.
Tau and the orcs are having a giant fight, and then a railgun shot goes into deep space and just kills Gilliman in the head. Just takes his head off.
Yeah, he just takes him out at random. It's like,
he just
why?
Happens to be waiting for a ship repair, and the void shields are down. And as us Mass Effect fans know, what is it like? The two cadets they're yelling at was like, when you fire this weapon, it might go off into deep space and hit someone else in 10,000 years. So, you know, it's, yeah.
Man, I hope when that new Mass Effect game comes out, it doesn't suck.
Same.
Whenever it comes out.
Anyway, that does kind of suck. But Eldred's still around, though, so...
Yeah, yeah. And, like, he's kind of managed to maintain being quite a major character despite what happened, you know... 21 years ago. But the major differences, I mean, say the major differences, it was like the status quo for, like we said, like 14 years, where Games Workshop had this stalemate where they did what at the time felt like a very big move, like having the fan base actually make a proper impact on the universe, and then having done it, they were like, and that's how it is. No, don't talk to me again. Don't ask me. Don't ask about what we're doing next. This is how things are, and we're just going to leave it like that, and that'll be fine.
And they never did it again.
Pretty, kind of, yeah. I mean, I think they've done, you know, they've done other like story-based things, and then we had I think the most recent thing was having Space Marines and Tyranids fight over, like, from the contents of the Leviathan box to work out whose reveals got showed off, you know, sooner after that box dropped.
Yeah, and the Nids won because I think people were pretty Space Marine birds for a bit.
Yeah. Although, I gotta be honest, that's, like, kind of a cool thing that would, like, I mean, I know you probably couldn't do it now because, like Bricky said, like, bots and stuff, but, like, I don't know, the idea that, like, you could directly impact the lore of 40K by playing the tabletop is kind of a neat idea. Like, yeah. It would probably get a lot more people playing the tabletop if they're like, oh, shoot, I can make my faction relevant just by winning enough, and, you know, that's kind of cool, but, you know, logistically, it probably doesn't work out so great.
Things were also a little different back in the day. The game was different. The systems were different. It was, you weren't playing 40K for the game. You were playing it because you wanted to make a narrative.
That's the other thing. Being able to, like, control the narrative a little bit is kind of dope.
Yeah. Some of my friends, I remember I had a friend who has this, like, Space Marine captain, and his base has the head of everyone he ever beat. So eventually
that's awesome.
Yeah, so eventually he had this, like, Space Marine captain, this power weapon, whatever, and it's this old, like, metal, whatever the hell, it's from way back in the day. And then he just basically it has, like, a helmet of a blood angel down the bottom, and then, like, an orc head, and then, like, a Tau head, and so on and so forth. But now he can't run it because the base is so big, because he had to keep, because he's had this for like 20 years.
Racked up a couple kills, yeah.
Yeah, so sorry, buddy, but that's no longer a 40-millimeter base. You can't run that in a tournament.
He's like magnetize the guy and then just have the display base. Every time he takes it anywhere, it's like his display base, and he takes it off, puts it on a normal base. Anyone he kills, he adds to the display base, and he just gets bigger and bigger.
And no one cared at the time, but he's on like a mountain of skulls.
He probably spent more money on kit bashing parts than he did on the actual model.
I mean, that's the way, surely.
Oh yeah, this is the way.
Is that just me? That's what I tend to do. I actually did that with a Chaos Knight when I had a game against someone who I think it was a Bloodthirster.
Well, Chaos Knight, you've got a lot more area, right?
Well, that I gave them part of the model because. That one Bloodthirster killed three of my Chaos Knights. And I was like, you know what? That was insane. Here you go. And I took the shoulder pad off the Chaos Knight that I'd kitbashed to have a Warhound Titan Vulcan Megabolter and gave it to him. And the next time I saw him, he had it on the base with the Bloodhound like standing on it, which was quality. I love that.
Hell yeah.
Stuff like that, just building up the characters, is just a really fun way to do it. And it feels like... Yeah. I mean, this is probably like a bit of like rose-tinted glasses way of looking at things, but very kind of prevalent way back. Mm-hmm. Sure. There was a lot of like narrative decisions made over anything else, which, I don't know. It's one of the most fun things about the game, isn't it?
Yeah. Finding the right balance between the two is important. Playing the game itself is really, really fun, and it's fine if you're going to do it in a more like traditional game sense that involves strategy and list building and that kind of stuff. But at the same time, you do want to try to stick around with the enjoyability that comes from the fact that you are doing a narrative war game.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's a good time.
Something that I meant to mention this earlier, but then I got distracted, which happens frequently whenever we do these. So this campaign, when I said that, like, you know, it's over 40,000 players sent in a bunch of results, I did manage to find a site I thought I'd lost where there is a direct rip of the White Dwarf article that Andy Chambers wrote after the campaign had finished. So there's loads of really, really good information in it. I will... link it, and just the top paragraph says so much. So Andy Chambers wrote, "The biggest campaign in Games Workshop history is drawn to a close. Over 40,000 players have sent in more than a quarter of a million game results over 8 weeks to decide the fate of the Cadian Gate." It's worth pointing out that when they decided to do this campaign, they thought, and they have outright said, and I think it was Andy Chambers who actually said, like, "Oh, we're expecting, like, the Armageddon campaign, like, plus 50%. We've had more results posted in a single day than in the entire Armageddon campaign." Jeez. And we thought that was big.
Hell yeah.
Wow.
It's kind of wholesome. It's kind of wholesome how much of a group effort this kind of thing was. And it just isn't really a thing you probably could do now.
Like Shai said,
you'd have to have like some big tournament that was overseen by like GW staff, and it'd have to be very stringent and strict, and it wouldn't be like as sort of, you know, by today's standards, you just couldn't really do the same thing.
Oh shit. Oh, yeah. Watch out. Oh, it's the monolith with the steel chair. Watch out.
My God, he's got a family.
That's the best. I don't think DK knows about that, but it's all right. I know, you don't. Kirioth.
So, yeah, I mean, just in terms of like the overall approach and this is the thing that I wanted to like for us to talk about, was because it was so weird and interesting when Games Workshop did like the 13th Black Crusade and Gathering Storm and the return of Primarchs, and I saw people getting super excited that, oh, Wolfen have got models and stuff. And there was me and, you know, obviously quite a few other people. It's not like I'm the only one who remembers this, but a good number of us kind of sat there going, oh, this feels weirdly familiar and totally different at the same time. Like, we've not just had this, but contributed to it directly the first time round, and that just became the status quo. That was just how 40K was for, you know, well over a decade. And now the events of the 13th Black Crusade are massive because they've changed 40K in huge, like, irrevocable ways. As a direct kind of consequence of all of that, we have Gilliman back, we have Primaris, like, so much stuff happened because of Games Workshop retconning what was, at the time, one of the biggest kind of events in 40K, and it's just become like a springboard, like a jumping off point for so much story development, which is like the total opposite of what actually happened, where the things occurred and then nothing changed for 14 years. It's wild how different the two kind of versions are.
I was going to say, how was it? Like, for someone that, like, played back then and was like, oh yeah, I contributed to, like, this crazy stalemate on Cadia, and then to see, like, the retcon version that is so different, and Cadia gets chonked into pieces, the Eye of Terror splits open, like, that's a huge change. I wonder, for you, Kyria, like, what, that's a huge retcon, a good retcon. That's got to be a massive, like, whoa, okay.
I was thinking that same thing, but I was thinking, like, you know, in a sense, that's kind of sucks that they did such a crazy event like that kind of thing and then retconned it. But, like, I'm in two minds about it, because on one hand, if your crazy event is canon for a decade and a half, like... At what point is it like, you know, that's long enough? A kid was born when Cadia fell, and then is a sophomore in high school by the time they changed it. Like, I don't know. But at the other time, like, I would love to ask someone who did participate in it and ask them how they feel.
Yeah, but I'm so curious to know how they feel about that. And it's like, because... When Cadia, that's such a landmark occasion that, like Kyrioth said, was so changing that, like, can you really be mad at that, though?
Yeah, I would, like the fall of Cadia right now identifies the entirety of the 40K world. Like, it is literally the point of the Lion Son of the Forest book, is the galaxy is split in half. Like, it's monumental.
Yeah.
Did they do any, like, Kyrioth, did you know if they did any, like, references to the original thing in the new Cadian books or something? Like, are there any players or winners that are, like, a random guardsmen or something? Did they do any of that stuff?
From, like, what homages? I can tell, like, not really. It's a lot of the foundational stuff is similar or the same, but then it just ramps up in such an insane way where... Instead of having, you know, chaos attack the surface and nothing really happens, but they are there and making life difficult, instead you've got, you know, like, Saint Celestine dueling Abaddon is massive and awesome, and that didn't happen first time round. So stuff like that just kind of... It's weird because the thing that I remember suddenly became not relevant anymore because so much of it was totally different. But at the same time... It was kind of really cool at the same time because of just... It didn't feel like that much changed. The actual campaign itself was really fun, and the store that I was going to and, like, the people I was playing against and stuff, it was a third-party store. So one of the things they did was, like, results from Games Workshop stores had more weight than ones reported independently. Which I can kind of understand why they would do that. I mean, they had to weed out a fair few not legitimate game reports.
Yeah.
But there was this kind of weird mix of, okay, if they abide by the results of this, this is going to be massive. But if it goes too far in one direction, are they even going to abide by it? Because that'll kind of upset things a bit too much. Like, this kind of weird mix of, like, we can make things change unless they decide that they don't want things to change, in which case there's no point doing this. But then as things sort of get more organized and people get more into it, and then them kind of actively saying Chaos won. Like, they didn't say it was a complete victory. In fact, in that White Dwarf, the line is victory for Chaos, not a complete victory. So it's like, okay, you did it. You didn't quite do all of it, but you did do it. I'm kind of in two minds, because on the one hand, they could have just had a second part, or like a 14th Black Crusade that just absolutely built on what the 13th achieved. But then again, 13th Black Crusade was already kind of embedded and already felt significant. And even just the name, the fact that, you know, 13 being the unlucky number, the 13th Black Crusade just sounds better than the 14th Black Crusade. It kind of speaks of, like, ill omen and things going wrong and, you know, like, something unstoppable, weirdly. Kind of a mix of, oh, but that's not what I remember at all. But then also going, oh, but it's really kind of cool that he won. Like, he just outright won. He really messed everybody up, and that's sort of what we were hoping for the first time round. You know, if you're playing on the side of Chaos and Disorder, you wanted that to begin with. So sort of seeing it happen, albeit quite a long time after, there was a little bit of, yeah, hell yeah, he did it. He actually did it. That's great.
Yeah, kind of hard to be mad at the outcome of what the retcon Fall of Cadia was, right? Like, even if it is vastly different, it's like, yeah, but... Like,
it reminds me when we read the Arcs of Omen book about Angron. Angron just won.
Chaos dub.
Yeah, just slammed apart this planet and turned everyone insane. And it's like, nice.
Huge. The biggest chaos, but huge chaos dub. Yeah.
Absolutely massive chaos dub. Which is nice, because it's a rarity.
Yeah, it's definitely... I could stand to see it happen more, but I also know why it doesn't. It's like a 50-50 of, be kind of nice if something really, really horrific happened, but if you do that too often, the setting kind of breaks. Like, they can't... I don't know what they're going to do now, having split the galaxy in half and, you know, all of this awful stuff happening, because if they escalate it too much, the existence of the Imperium becomes kind of nonsensical, whereas for a long time they've managed to balance it just right, where it's like... Everything is really bad, but nothing is quite like apocalyptic bad yet. It's just on the brink. It's always on the brink.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what they did following the second version of the 13th Black Crusade was such a huge shift that I just really liked seeing that amount of change. There is, though, there is something that the original had that the new version doesn't, which is a genuine shame, because the lost and the damned aren't a thing on the tabletop. They used to be. You could have your lost and the damned army, and you could have a bunch of kitbashed horrible mutants alongside kind of normal guardsmen who could have Chaos Spawn and Leman Russes, and they could field defilers as well, which was awesome. And there is a...
Those are some old minis, dude.
No, hell yeah. So the Lost and the Damned was basically the the Lost and the Damned from Codex Eye of Terror, as Shai just pointed out, that you probably think it's the Firehawks, it's Traitor Guard. So Codex Eye of Terror implemented the ability to field Traitor Guard along with mutants, with Chaos Spawn, with like a Chaos Space Marine champion leading the army. So you weren't really fielding a bunch of Chaos Marines. You were fielding normal dudes. You would be fielding mutants and artillery and, you know, stolen tanks and stuff. So for the first time, you actually got to just put Traitor Guard on the tabletop.
Wait, what were the Lost and the Damned? I thought they were the Ghost Rider dudes.
Yeah, I am a little confused.
They are. It's one of those things where they've taken a name and they've reused it.
Oh, god damn it! Because I've heard Lost in the Dam refer to chaos cultists and shit before, but I thought...
So this is literally just Guard that have just gone trained as a faction.
Legion of the Damned.
We all did it.
Oh, Briggy got me all confused.
No, well, that's fair. They're both the Damned, and they both start with an L. Lost in the Damned and Legion of the Damned.
It's not the only thing that starts with an L here, unfortunately.
We were sharing
the same brain cell.
Yeah,
it happens. Oh, dang it. All right. Yeah. Okay. Traitor Guard. Yeah.
But yeah, you don't have unique rules for that now. If you want to play Traitor Guard, you play Guard, and then, or you do a lot of cultist conversion work with Chaos, and you're like, yeah, the Traitor Guard. For a brief, wonderful, shining moment, you could have actual Traitor Guard, and you could kitbash them with orc parts to make mutants, including in the first picture I put in there. If you look closely, there's a dude who's scooting along on a single wheel coming out of his torso. Why?
Whoa, what?
Whose idea is that? I don't know, but I do love it.
Wait, where is that on the picture? Where the guy scooting along on a single wheel? Where is that?
Unicycle Jones.
On the Lost and the Damned
Bro.
Picture up there, you can literally see the fact that it's orc parts as well. Like big muscly arms. They've got shoulder parts. Yeah. It was great. It was awesome, man. This also completely useless bit of trivia. No one's going to care about but me. The picture of the Defiler there—that's the first time that there was a picture of a Defiler model in a codex.
And it's still the same model.
Still the same model. Yeah, the Defiler was in the Chaos 3.5 codex, but it was only a drawing of it. There was no picture of it in any of the army shots because the kit wasn't ready at that point. Even though the stats were there and the rules were there. And so when Codex Eye of Terror came out, it was like, oh, wow, they've actually got pictures of this thing that's kind of already been a thing, sort of. What's going on here? It was great. It's also why I ended up buying two of them almost immediately, because at the time, I'm willing to concede, they've not aged that well, but at the time, it was pretty cool.
Okay. That's dope.
Yeah, I gotta be honest. I still hate the Defiler with a burning passion.
That's fair. Why is that, Mikey?
It's not aged well.
It is not. Oh, yikes.
That's not that bad. You make it sound like it's some abomination against, well, I mean, it's chaos, so of course it's an abomination against God, but like that's not a bad mini.
Thing is,
nothing wrong with that.
It's not that bad until you compare it to all the other demon engines that they've made. At which point, it's like, oh, I wish the Defiler looked more like literally any of these. Like, a Defiler that looks more like a Mauler Fiend, with all, like, the muscle and stuff going over it.
Okay, fair.
And, like, more kind of rounded armor and stuff, and, like, maybe a gun poking out of something that isn't just a box. Like, that would undeniably be kind of cooler.
I'm not saying there aren't better, but like it's not like the Defiler's that bad either. Like it's fine.
It's not the worst.
You know what? I imagine that look would look better as an AdMech vehicle. Put up like Dune Crawler legs and give it a bit more of like a steampunk aesthetic, and I think it would look better as AdMech. In a weird way, the AdMech make it look more alien and strange than
Chaos does. Of mecha dendrites coming out from its back or something. Yeah, you're probably right.
Now you've said it, I kind of want to see that.
The new Chaos stuff as a demon engine goes, it has to combine a bit more of that weird grotesqueness for me.
Yeah, the sort of mutated flesh coming out of the steel.
That's just the way I look at it.
Exactly,
Shy. That's what I'm saying. It looks like a dune crawler. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It does kind of.
Exactly. That's why I would prefer it.
That's fair. I'll give
you
that.
Just want a dune crawler. Don't want the Defiler.
I really like the dune crawlers.
Just wants bigger, better dune crawlers or walkers or whatever they're called.
You know, I actually want to do an ask to our viewers. Viewers, if any of you were part of like a comment section would be kind of nice. You know, like if any of you were part of the 2003 Cadia, Fall Acadia, like whole shtick, if they let you have internet in your old folks' home, please go ahead and please send us a comment and tell you how you feel about the new Cadia stuff considering the old stuff. I'd love to I'd love to hear it if your nurse will let you type it out.
What's that?
It was 20 years ago.
It was literally 21 years ago.
And think about what Warhammer is like in the age demographic. There are people who are in their mid 40s that played that. They are in their 60s. My comment might not be off base.
Yeah, actually, true enough, I guess. Sheesh. Yeah, that's, well, okay, well, maybe so.
I can't wait for my sins to catch up with me.
Yep. Bricky is going to be hosting Adric from his nursing home in 20 years.
Yeah.
The nurses let me out. I can do today's episode.
And then my person that I room with, because I'm in like a sniff, will be like...
You're in a shared, yeah.
Yeah, they'll be like screaming the entire time, because that's what happens in skilled
Because they think
facilities.
You're talking factual, and yeah.
Oh, no, I mean, because they just do that.
Just in general, just constantly.
Oh, when I had to pick up patients from like the sniffs and stuff, it was like a horror movie in there. It's awful. Yeah. It's awful. Yeah. Anyway, as someone who likes to scream, continue, Kirioth.
Well, I was going to say, based on current trends, we can expect another 13th Black Crusade to drop on, like, what, in 2031? So it's not that far to go until the third version, and then we can see how it goes from there.
Yeah, we can comment on that one.
Yeah.
From our nursing home.
That's a good point. That'll be in 7 years.
Oh, not Ouch. Long now.
Wait, 2017 2017 was 7 years ago.
I don't love that.
Oh man, isn't it crazy how the COVID lockdown was 4 years ago?
It feels like it was centuries ago. It feels like yesterday. It was like 10 years ago.
No, it feels like yesterday for me. Yeah.
Really? For me, it feels like that was like a decade ago.
It feels like both. It really feels like both. I will sit there and be like, oh, that was during the pandemic. Oh, man, can you believe the pandemic was last year? And then it's like, well, the lockdown bit was not last year. What are you talking about? But it feels like it was. But then at the same time, it felt like it went on for at least 10 years. Like the 3 months
Maybe
where you weren't
allowed
to go out.
Maybe it's because like I so rarely go out that it's all just one big blur. You know, like before COVID, I wasn't really going out and doing much. COVID happened. I was like, well, business as usual. And then, hey, I'm still here. So it all just kind of feels like one continuous timeline to me.
That's the way to deal with it. Just don't go anywhere. You won't notice any difference. You know what?
Yes, something like that.
That's the message. That's the message for today's episode. Don't go anywhere. Simply submit your reports for your games that you've definitely played for a campaign that ended a long time ago. It's fallen apart already.
Praise the
it's fallen
Messiah.
Apart. Hit the eject button. Someone press it. Let's go.
Oh, is the dementia kicking in?
Yes.
Oh,
is
crap.
Is kicking in?
Hey, DK, will you make me a sandwich?